This is another edition of Get Lit with Literature. This is Monk. And there's more at the website, allbook-books.com. Got a bunch of events going on in March. If you want to find out more, you can contact me if you're not already on the list. Paul Reps, R-E-P-S, was an American artist, poet, and author. He is best known for his unorthodox haiku-inspired poetry that was published from 1939 onwards. So he's considered one of the first haiku poets in this country. He was a well-received artist. This is from Wikipedia. Many of his books have artwork influenced by Zen Buddhism. He traveled widely and spent a large amount of time in Asia. In Japan, his art was widely accepted, and he went there in association with this displays of his artwork in galleries and to reaffirm the Buddhist understanding. One of his exhibits, he had his poems, haiku written on paper, hung with clothespins on a clothesline, and then had a fan blowing them. So that's how unorthodox he was. And if you read his haiku, they are often very humorous. And they come with the calligraphy, the brush calligraphy, which is also unorthodox. He's got one of like him sitting in, sitting like a Buddha inside a potato. And they're very simple. And they really break the what's sort of accepted as more formal haiku. So he was one of the first. So it took me a while to find out about him. He's overlooked even in the modern haiku world. He's referred to sometimes, but definitely overlooked and underappreciated. And he's got one, it's a picture, it's a drawing of a comma and a circle with a little hole in it, almost like a period. And then the haiku is period, comma, sunset. But he always, so much wonder of the natural world. He's got one, suddenly, from tree, peach blossom. How can this be? So haiku rarely rhymes, but there he expresses the wonder of the natural world. Suddenly, from tree, peach blossom. How can this be? The wonder of spring. Now here's an interesting example. I saw the calligraphy online, an interesting example of what to trust or not online. I saw the one I want to read, one of his most famous poems, online with the calligraphy, and I thought, wait a minute, I don't remember it that way. So I got out his book, Zen Telegrams, and it is different. The layout is different and the wording is different. So, maybe that was some other version, or I don't know how that got messed up that way. But yeah, that one has four lines. The one in the book has three lines, and the one online has the word stop, and the one in the book has the word stopped. So here it is, one of his most famous haiku poems with the calligraphy of the bowl. Drinking a bowl of green tea, I stopped the war. Drinking a bowl of green tea, I stopped the war. And that's from, this book is 1959, Zen Telegrams. Excellent book. If you can find a copy of that, excellent book. And the story behind it is one of my favorite all-time stories related to haiku. And again, when I look online, I see two versions. Two very different versions. So I'll read the first version that I learned. Yeah, here's the one that I first learned. In the early 50s, Reps, who was in his 40s, had traveled to Japan en route to visit a respected Zen master in Korea. He went to the passport office to apply for his visa and was politely informed that his request was denied due to the conflict that had just broken out. Reps walked away and sat down quietly in the waiting area. He reached into his bag, pulled out his thermos, and poured a cup of tea. Finishing his tea, he pulled out a brush and paper upon which he wrote a picture poem. The clerk read the poem and it brought tears to his eyes. He smiled, bowed with respect, and stamped Reps's passport for passage to Korea. That's why that's one of you can see why that's one of my favorite all-time stories. As far as when I do haiku classes, which, by the way, I have one coming up. If anybody signs up on Thursday, March 7th in Sayville at the Buddha Belly Records, have to throw that in. But that shows the power of haiku, that it brought the man to tears, and he stamped the paperwork. Gosh, that just, when I think of all the bureaucratic, technocratic stuff nowadays, that story and the haiku and the artwork reminds me of the human element that can transcend and get through all that stuff. And the other thing I love about the story is that he didn't react. He didn't get angry or this or that. He reached into his bag. He walked away, sat down quietly, and he used the tools he has. There's a famous haiku, I think, by Issa. The man with radishes pointed my way with a radish. So when he used the tools he already has in his bag, he pulled out the thermos, poured a cup of tea, and he did the calligraphy. He put the brush and the paper, and he wrote it all right there. So that's called, as John Trudeau would say, that's called outthinking the system. Now, did he actually stop? Does it actually stop the war? That gets into a whole discussion of what one person can do and personal responsibility. You know, yes, I think in the sense that we each have a responsibility to do what we can. Am I going to stop the genocidal war, the onslaught in Gaza going on now and elsewhere, perpetrated by Israel and U.S. and other backed by U.S. and other countries, the U.K., weapons from Germany, etc.? Am I going to stop that? I don't know, but I don't think so, but I'm doing this. I'm just, by my speaking about this, I'm doing what I can. I'm doing what I can to raise awareness, and so that's at least my cup of tea. His statement is also reflective of the Zen tradition. There's another quote, a Zen saying, which I like. When I pick up one speck of dust, all nations are united. When I pick up one speck of dust, all nations are united. So it's all interconnected, and everything, anything that we do, a prayer in a cave in India could literally help someone, you know, decide not to do something insane. So I do think that there is that ability to literally change things in that way. But also, I'm not a fool to think that that always works. But, you know, you gotta try, you gotta do what you can, and we each do what we can. And then the other topical thing related to this is in the news, young man, 25-year-old serviceman of the United States Air Force, set himself on fire outside of the front gate of the embassy of Israel in Washington, D.C. and he live streamed it to protest the I won't call it even a war. It's a genocidal onslaught, or whatever you want to call it. And he said that he was protesting against, quote, what people have been experiencing in Palestine at the hands of their colonizers, and declared that he, quote, will no longer be complicit in genocide, after which he doused himself with a flammable liquid and set himself on fire. As he burned, Bushnell repeatedly shouted, "Free Palestine," while one Secret Service officer pointed a gun at him to ensure the safety of two others who were attempting to extinguish him. So I don't know if that, obviously he's raised awareness. I'm talking about it. A lot of Palestinians are considering him a hero. I personally would think, you know, he might have been more productive to start a social media campaign, or just, you know, raise hell about the topic and do what he can in that way. A friend of mine suggested he could have burned his uniform instead of himself. That's another good idea. So who am I to say, in the long haul of history and what that guy's conscience and what it was. But I find it over the top, so to speak. But hey, if that stops the war, then I'll drink a cup of tea to Aaron Bushnell for that. But I think the roundabout point maybe I'm trying to make here is that we each take riffing off of Reps's haiku, is that we each in our own way stop the war, unless you're part of the insanity or part of the consciousness that is the genocidal side of things, the colonization side of things. And to show the paranoia of the Secret Service, there's a guy burning himself to death and the Secret Service is pointing a gun at him, like trying to make freaking sure he doesn't do anything crazy to hurt them. And then I think there was another quote that said, the guy said, something about, like, why are you pointing a gun? I need a fire extinguisher or something like that. So whether you calmly do a brush calligraphy and write a poem, or whether you burn yourself up, I mean, those are kind of the two extremes of the same case. So anywhere along that scale there. But at least I think the key thing is the consciousness. If you're at a coffee place or a tea place, and you're talking about, if you're talking about this with someone while you're having a cup of tea, you or a cup of coffee, that is doing what you can to stop the war. Because if enough people did that and enough people acted and did things, it would add up, and it would, as Pete Seeger used to say, they were putting spoonfuls of sand on the seesaw, and eventually it tips. So you never know which grain of sand that's going to tip the seesaw. So we just keep doing it, whatever we're doing. And I also, with that example of the self-immolation or the quietly having a cup of tea and writing a poem, I want to say that coming up, I'm going to be interviewing Hillary S. Webb, who's the author of Yanantin and Masintin in the Andean World, Complementary Dualism in Modern Peru. It's a fabulous book, and it's a fascinating study of non-dualism, and in the simplest terms, although it's hard to define, is complementary opposites in the Andean Peruvian way of life, philosophy, whatever you call it. And so that made me think of that, because sometimes there's the extremes of there is no right or wrong. We just kind of look at the possibilities. And so again, from the extreme of self-immolation to stop a war to quietly stirring some tea and writing a poem, those I would put in that Yanantin scale of complementary opposites, even though the topic, if you listen in to that interview, there's way more depth and way more to it. So thank you for listening, and be peaceful and well.